We are representing artists from underprivileged backgrounds, underrepresented backgrounds, and really sort of celebrating diversity.
That's Claire Cheng, and this is the On Design podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the On Design podcast. I'm your host, Justyna Green. I'm super psyched about a few more episodes that we have for you this year, and thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the last two episodes in which I spoke to Tim Lane, who's the creative director at Penguin and used to be the art director at BuzzFeed. And I also spoke to Sarah and Maninder, a lovely couple who are running Sappho Massey homewares business. So that's kind of last two episodes. So if you haven't listened to them, you can go on and kind of have a listen after this one now, because this one is pretty awesome. So my guest is Claire Cheng, who has recently established Studio Pi, which is an illustration and photography agency working with creatives from minority backgrounds to champion diversity and equality in creative industries. And that's something that I feel very passionate about. I'm really, really pleased that they've managed to launch the business and launch it now as well. And we talk all about it in our conversation. Prior to starting the Studio Pi, Claire worked in art direction for 18 years, also being art director at The Stylist. So she shares heaps and heaps of knowledge and top tips for new creatives joining the industry. And also, Claire has been absolutely brilliant for being very, very open about her own background and how she overcame her challenges and what her life story and kind of creative journey has been. And I think that you'll find it very, very, very inspiring, because I did. And I hope that if you are feeling that there are blocks to your career, that you don't think they should be there, that they will help you to make decisions or find people and mentors, or get more confidence to see that you can do it. So here it is. So I thought we'll start kind of right here, right now, about how's your week been, what are you working on now, and how does it feel to join a brand new business in the middle of pandemic?
So this week, I have been working on a launch of a new photography and illustration agency called Studio Pi. So we're in our infancy and we're not even 3 weeks old yet. So it's there's a lot going on. We are representing artists from underprivileged backgrounds, underrepresented backgrounds, and really sort of celebrating diversity. So I look after the illustration side of things, and Tara looks after all the photographers. So this week I have been juggling several live projects. I'm in talks with a few other companies about possible collaborations. And it's been a real mix, actually, of editorial, commercial, print, digital, social. We've had packaging inquiries, and both on a national and international level. So yeah, things are really kicking off. It's really busy. I've been meeting people for possible collaborations. I've been working on lots of promotional material, because I think the important thing is that we try and remain as visible as possible. Obviously, lots of people in the industry started to like share our story, but it's important that it doesn't sort of tail off. So I'm looking after some videos and collating social media content, stories that could possibly go into the website, negotiating jobs, looking at lots of other different aspects of a business, because that's the thing.
So many things.
Yeah, essentially it's a new startup. So there's a lot going on, definitely.
And how do you feel? Go on.
Moving on to your question about starting a new role and launching a business during a pandemic, this has been a real challenge. We're quite a small team. We are four females, but this studio is the sister studio of Bridge Studio, which is the creative commercial arm of News UK. So the great thing is that we've got this amazing foundation in place, and we do have the support and backing of News UK. So lots of help has been provided in, you know, from finance to the journalists to the video team. So we've had so much help. So it's amazing that foundation is in place already. But I do sort of feel as though my brain has been working overtime. It's definitely at full capacity because, you know, not only like starting a new job, you've got so much to learn, like people's names, like who are those important people that are going to help you out, that IT person, you know, jot down that name. But just also like how the business works, and we're a new business, so we can put things in place. So there have been so many video calls, which is also quite exhausting because I do find that it's really hard to gauge the energy and emotion in a room, you know, when you can't, you can't feel that energy. And I gesticulate a lot with my hands when I'm trying to get a point across, like I'm doing it now. And when you can't see people's hands and you just sort of see their double chin, it's actually quite hard to sort of grasp, you know, what they're sort of trying to tell. So I think your brain is just sort of working overtime on these calls. So yeah, that has required a lot of brain power. but I did meet the team in real life.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, we did go in the first week. And so I saw people for a couple of hours. And that was really nice because I'm lucky enough that there were some familiar faces, because I've met these people before in the industry, Wired and NME and The Observer. And I've met the founder, Satch, before. So there were some familiarities, so that was nice. But I think one of the hardest things for me is I'm a very visual person. I like to physically see things. So going into the building helps because you get to see this physical structure. You get to sort of navigate your way around an office. You know where HR are, you know where the stationery cupboard is, you know, all of these things help you put that huge jigsaw puzzle of parts together in your head. But I think trying to do that hunched over a 13-inch screen while you're manoeuvring a new business and every single aspect is digital is hard.
Yeah, probably not many people have done that before.
No, and do you know what? I've saved a few trees since lockdown, definitely, because I used to print out a lot for my job at Stylist. But actually, if I could print out the numerous lists that I've got for different areas of the business and just have a little folder, my little Bible, and like colleagues that I've worked with before will always laugh at my little Bibles. But you know what? They're my saviour. It's something that you can just flick through really quickly. So I would love to sort that out. But anyway, I don't have a printer at home. So at the minute, it is all through that 13-inch screen.
Yeah, it's quite hard to keep everything digital, isn't it?
Totally. I've got about 10,000 tabs open. I just think just working on such a small screen as well, it just means that you can't have multiple things open at once.
Yeah, and I think it can affect creativity as well, because your creativity might be kind of moving sheets of paper or touching paper textures. It's just, yeah, there's so much to the tactile experience.
No, absolutely.
And tell me, how was the process of choosing the illustrators, photographers that you'll represent? And because that's, you know, and also about, because all your artists are from minority backgrounds. Is that a right thing to say?
pretty much. A lot of them are from minority backgrounds. So basically, the UK government's all-party parliamentary group for creative diversity, they recognise that there are certain groups in society that were hugely underrepresented in that industry. So people of colour, women, people with living disabilities, and people from working class backgrounds, they were all sort of recognised in this group. So therefore, all of the photographers and illustrators do come from that background, which is amazing. So basically, the founder, Sachini Imbildelia, who is the creative director of Bridge Studio, she's an absolutely amazing force and a real advocate for change. I mean, she's worked on some absolutely amazing projects. Did you see the video, You Clap For Me Now?
I haven't.
I'll send it to you. But basically, she worked with Darren Smith, who wrote the poem for that video, which basically highlighted the critical role of key workers from Black, Asian, minority ethnic backgrounds during COVID crisis, and basically sort of, you know, it was just a gentle reminder that these people have been working for years and will continue to carry on working throughout the pandemic and after the pandemic, and just to sort of appreciate them. But this was seen by 285 million people worldwide. And I actually said the opening line on the video. So my face was trending on Twitter, which was quite hilarious. But Satch has worked on some really amazing other projects as well. So when she heard about those stats, she was like, you know what? I'm going to do something to redress this balance. So that's why she had the idea of basically launching the agency. And it would offer photographers and illustrators from those underrepresented backgrounds just the visibility that they deserved. You know, she was basically trying to create a platform where they could be seen and heard. So basically, the first time I heard about it was when Satch emailed me and said that she wanted me to be part of the judging process. So it was all...
Oh, to choose people.
Yeah, exactly. So this is when the illustrators and the photographers got chosen. And so basically, she reached out to art directors, picture editors, really, you know, creative directors in the industry, and basically it was all blind judged, so it was all really, really fair. The bias was completely stripped out, and like all we had, we got a link to all of the artists, and everyone was presented equally. So we just saw a selection of work, and then we had to mark it. So it was just done in a really, really fair way. And also it was done by creatives who are women, who are people of colour. And this is what we actually want to see. And these are the people that we love. So it feels like it's a really fair representation.
That's such an important part of the selection process, not only who you're choosing from, but actually who's choosing. And I feel like that's the part that can be often missing from a variety of campaigns.
Yeah,
totally. Where campaigns can celebrate certain group of a society, but the campaign is not made by that group.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you have a view, just not their own view of, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. So the nice thing is that lots of the artists that got chosen were ones that I was particularly fond of.
Oh, brilliant. So how does it feel now to be kind of from commissioning regularly illustration, animation and photography to have your roster and to represent them?
Do you know what? It feels absolutely lovely. basically, when the opportunity came up to work with this initiative, I just thought it's too good an opportunity to miss. It's something that's, you know, it's really close to Satch's heart. She's a woman of colour, so am I. I fall into all of the underrepresented categories in some way or other. So I just think to use my 18 years of experience of working with creatives throughout, you know, my career, I've got a real insight of being a client. I know what the client wants, But I think the real draw for me with this agency is the fact that we're not taking on too many illustrators and photographers at the start. We're keeping the numbers limited so that we can actually nurture the talent. We can support them. We can allow them to flourish and make sure that they're producing the right type of work for their books, you know, so that they can get those commissions in. So a lot of the job is going to be about nurturing. So essentially, I won't have a design team, but my, you know, my support will go into all of my illustrators. So I think that's really, really important and makes us different to other agencies who might take on a huge wealth of talent, but then actually they probably don't get that support that they need. And I sort of feel as though on the illustration side, like a lot of illustrators have probably never had that guidance from an art director, especially if they've been freelance. Like the only feedback that they get might be from when they're working on a project together, but the, you know, but sometimes it's not necessarily guidance that helps you build your portfolio. You're answering a brief. So, you know, it's really lovely to be able to sort of use my skills that I've already got to sort of help others.
That's brilliant, and it's so important what you say, that you're not just having artists to, you know, do this bit of packaging or that bit of editorial, but you're actually thinking about them kind of and their careers and kind of what they stand for as well, and developing that. That's so important.
Absolutely. And do you know what? I think with the illustrators, there were probably a couple who weren't the strongest illustrators, but you know what? It's obvious that they've got so much talent, but all they need is that little bit of guidance to sort of say, make these little tweaks, and then suddenly you've honed in on this really lovely, unique style that really sort of represents you and makes you unique. And that is all they sort of needed, a little bit of guidance, and then suddenly, you know, they're really marketable. Like people, they will get the commissions. So that's been really nice as well, to sort of give people chances. Like, we haven't just taken on illustrators who are very established, who've had quite a long career, but maybe not the visibility that they deserve. We're actually giving people, you know, chances as well to sort of develop their career.
And with the 18 years of experience, do you kind of spot it immediately now when you see a portfolio? Can you kind of do your eyes and brain just do a quick magic of that's where it can happen, that's where this person can go to?
I think so. I mean,
come on, you can say that, you know, you've got this.
I think it's a little bit harder to see that on Instagram because there's a real mix of content on there. So I think it's always a good idea if you are a professional creative to have a professional Instagram feed as well as a personal one, so that I do think it's important to share what you personally do, but these days I do think that art directors, picture editors do go to Instagram. Like, generally people don't really update their websites, you know, frequently. That's one of these long-winded things that takes a long time to sort out. So if you have a personal feed, keep it separate to your work feed so that creatives can look through your work very quickly. But yeah, I can definitely spot potential and, you know, guide people on the way that, you know, they need to sort of tailor their book.
That's really awesome. So there's so much that you can do kind of with the artists that you have now and help them out as well. And kind of in the 18 years of your experience, what has been your experience kind of working in that direction of diversity in the industry? And I mean both diversity in terms of people coming from different backgrounds, but also diversity of ideas and thought.
So I think if I'm speaking in general terms, I do feel as though I've been the only female person of colour working at quite a few companies, which also span to the wider organization. I feel as though it has been a bit of a mix though, but I can definitely say that I've always felt like a minority, like always wherever I've worked. I mean, at the start of my career, I worked for the Voice newspaper, which is a black national weekly paper marketed at British African Caribbeans. And I worked on a publication called Woman to Woman, which was monthly, and we had a mix of fashion and beauty and culture. And that workforce, I reckon about 80 to 85% were black. So I was the only East Asian there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a minority. I didn't really feel like a minority. For me, I feel as though I just gained this wonderful insight into black culture. I was taken out for rice and peas and dumplings and patties. And actually, I think when you're exposed to cultures, you grasp hold of these little nuances. You have a better understanding of them. And you do take them with you because you've had this firsthand experience. Sort of, you don't really know that you are, but it is all a learning process and an education. And I do feel as though I have, you know, taken some of those elements with me in other places where I've worked. Like, I remember a story that we were doing at Stylist, and it was a beauty story. And it was about how you cope with your hair during lockdown. And we illustrated it with, well, we were going to illustrate it with an image of a black model with perfect hair. And I was like, no, black hair is a nightmare. These poor girls, it will never look like that. That's like, that is a long time of grooming. So, you know, they changed that picture to something that was a bit more suitable. Because in my head, it was just wrong. But I think before Studio Pi, thinking about my creative peers, so the art directors and creative directors, they've all been white and male in full-time roles, apart from The Voice, where it was a guy called Ricky, who was a black male. So for me, I've never really worked with strong women in at the top of their game in these creative positions until now, with Satch. And I'm primarily working in Studio Pi is made up of a group of four women. It's actually really small, and two of those women do have work across Bridge Studio. So yeah, I do think that's definitely something that needs to be addressed and changed. You know, I did work with some amazingly talented art directors like Andrew Diprose at Wired. And then I was fortunate enough to work with some really great female editors as well, like Jill Morgan at the Times Magazine, and great editors when I was at Stylist. But looking back, they were all white. But I do think that, you know, places are definitely starting to change now. I mean, I remember working in very male-dominated environments as well, definitely because of the titles. And in one place, I was the only female in a team of eight. So often there, my voice wasn't heard. My opinions were quashed in meetings. And, you know, men are just generally better at propelling their voices. Women are a lot quieter. So it was interesting because I ended up getting quite thick skin there. And I did have to battle sometimes. This was a men's magazine that I was working on where I was an art director. And I remember even choosing pictures of women that had to go on the cover. I didn't want women to be shown as a sexual object. Like, I just thought, actually, why can't we approach this in a slightly different way? We can definitely be more suggestive. This is much less harming to women as well, because actually, this does have a detrimental effect. like, because essentially women don't generally look like this. So there were huge battles. And I do think that if that role was run by a male art director, the outcome would probably have been a lot different. So I did gain really thick skin there. And I do remember that I was labelled as the Iron Woman at one point, like literally. And I do think that sometimes women who are strong and stand up for themselves often get labelled with being fierce and hot-headed and brazen. And actually, you become this target, and sometimes it's almost like an excuse that someone can say anything to you or treat you badly or just to provoke a reaction, when actually I'm just trying to do my job.
It's so unfair, really, that you have to deal with those other things as well, rather than just focusing on your job, when you have to, you know, spend half your time reasserting yourself just so that you're listened to. Or like you said, getting thick-skinned as well.
Yeah, totally.
Do you wish it wasn't like that when you were kind of progressing through your career? Do you think it could have been easier, or you could have been in other places? Wasn't it for you? For the race or gender?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, it could have been a lot easier. Like, I feel as though women offer a lot more emotional support. They've got so much more empathy. Women make adjustments to other women because they know about women's needs. And I just think that women just check up on each other a lot more as well. I think things could have been a lot easier, for sure. I mean, I might have propelled earlier, I might have developed quicker, I might be more confident. I do feel as though women support women in the sense of life and career advice, where men don't really. I mean, male and females just think quite differently, even when we go for jobs. Like, there's that stat, isn't there, that men will go for a job if they tick 4 out of 10 boxes, whereas women won't if they tick 9 out of 10. Like, men just, like, go for things. They have this confidence. They ask for a certain salary, whereas women just generally don't. So women do offer each other that level of support. So I do think that things could have been different. I mean,
you're doing amazingly well as it is. You know, it's not too...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's just more because I think because one thing is, you know, the role or the position, but another thing is just how you feel through your career, right? Do you feel like it is a battle, or you're, you know, even just the idea of feeling like, oh yeah, I'm good at this and I can do it. It's even that just makes difference to how you might feel day to day when you work.
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout my career, it has been a battle. It's been a huge battle, but I knew nothing different either. So I just thought, this is the way it is. I have to shout, I have to raise my voice, otherwise I won't get heard. And do you know what? I have realised that it's not the way it should have been. Women are getting rewritten into the history books. You know, people are starting to listen to women. There are women who are reaching certain levels of height in a company, which is amazing. But it has definitely been a battle. And I feel as though it's taken me 16 years to actually finally say that I am good at what I do, whereas I don't think I would have said that like 2 years ago. It's taken a really long time for me to sort of acknowledge that.
Yeah, which is shocking. Looking at everything you've done and being 18 years in.
I know.
When you think about it.
18 years is a long time, isn't it?
It's a lovely time to just reach those levels of mastery, you know, when, like you say, when you look at an illustrator, you're like, yep, yeah, that's what they need. This is where they need a nudge, and where you can spot talent, and when you can spot a hard worker as well.
Yeah.
I do kind of hang up on the word talent, because I think it can be quite detrimental to people, because I think 90% is hard work. and being kind to others so that, you know, people actually want to work with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then there's the talent, as in, I think, having your own ideas and standing up for yourself and not worrying about fitting in.
No, definitely.
Because that's when you get heard as well. Mm-hmm. And did you always want to work in art direction or in design, in kind of visual industries?
Yeah, do you know what? I knew from a very, very, very young age that I wanted to be a graphic designer. Like, I've always really loved looking at magazines and anything that's really visual. So, yeah, like, it's quite weird, actually, that I've always, always known. So that was just, you know, always being my mission. So I knew that I wanted to go to university and, like, study art direction, definitely, like, well, graphic design.
Yeah, where did you study?
I studied at Nottingham Trent.
And oh, lovely.
You know, one of the main reasons I went there was because they had one day a week that was dedicated to drawing. And I actually almost moved into illustration. Like, I really, really loved drawing. And the saddest thing about that course is that Tuesday afternoon, drawing day, just turned into this dotting day. And no one turned up. And so they ended up like sacking off this day and we had to like go to the library. But when I did my course, before my course, I'd never used a computer before. Like, it was always like pen and paper. So that's what I was really familiar with. So that's one thing that really drew me to doing that course.
To do something different.
Yeah, because they had a one day a week that was drawing, and I really, really loved drawing.
So. And did you enjoy your time there?
Yeah, I did. It was quite an interesting time. It was quite tough because I had to work throughout university as well. So I didn't, and obviously for your final degree show, everything has to be displayed absolutely perfectly, especially because of the field that this is graphic design, it's got to be perfect. And thankfully, I was able to apply for a hardship fund, which allowed me to put my show together. Otherwise, at one point, I think in the second year, I was thinking that I'd have to drop out of uni because I couldn't really afford to be there. And I was working already. I fully had to support myself. So I was really thankful for that fund. You know, my parents weren't able to support me. But just going back to sort of my journey, and this sort of moves into the whole working class background thing as well, because actually I don't think this is spoken about enough. So, you know, it's amazing that people like Marcus Rashford are really trying to make that difference. I mean, if you haven't got that foundation and basic necessities, then you literally can't move forward. But I was never encouraged to move into a creative subject. My parents were very much of that sort of typical Asian family that, so you have to study law or medicine because drawing pictures is not aspiring. You know, you're never going to make any money.
I know that story too well. I've heard it too many times as well.
Oh, so many times. But I remember that my father actually chose my GCSEs for me, and this was when the curriculum had changed and sort of put subjects into different boxes. And thankfully, art was in this like leftover box at the end, so I ended up being able to take art. But I just think, I'm not really sure how my life would be completely different if I'd not been able to choose that. So I don't know whether that was just a tiny little stroke of luck there that allowed me to study art, because I knew that I always wanted to move to be a graphic designer. But, you know, it was, my parents did make huge sacrifices. They came over from Hong Kong to London in the early 20s, and they lived with my auntie and uncle in London for quite a few years. And my mum started to have children, so I was the third girl to be born. And then my parents were like, okay, so we need to actually set up life on our own. We need to set up a business or something. And that opportunity came about because my dad had a really bad car accident, which left him with like a 3-inch scar on his face. And that through the compensation money, he actually put that towards the deposit of a property. And up north, so that's basically where I grew up, and basically started a business. And they didn't really have a clue about businesses at all. So, you know, they had to sacrifice so much. And even while they were running this business at the very start, you know, my mum's trying to look after like 3 babies. So The eldest is 2.5. The second eldest is just over 1. And then there's me, who's like a few months old. So actually what happened in the end is that this foster family used to come into the takeaway, and the lady, Sheila, would say, you know, I can look after your children. And my mum was really sort of against it. But eventually myself and my second eldest sister, we were actually fostered for 5 years with this foster family. And she fostered about 45 children in her lifetime, and she had 6 kids of her own. So she was just this amazing woman, and I sort of feel as though some of the values that I've got from her about, you know, giving and supporting others, it 100% comes from her, even though I moved back home at the age of 5. But, you know, my parents had to sacrifice so much to give me that opportunity. But, you know, this wasn't easy on me either. I've sort of done quite a few mental health issues off the back of that. So, you know, coming from a working class background, it is really hard. I had to also work in the takeaway, and I did quite a few hours per week. I missed out on going to youth club and things like that. And I remember the night before every A-level exam that I had, I had to work. And I was probably doing about 50 hours a week in the takeaway. And it was the second takeaway that they'd opened. And they basically moved to a smaller town because they thought it would be more profitable there. And, you know, so I was trying to do my A-levels and having to work 50 hours a week as well. You know, and then I had to save for a year before I could move down to London, like after university. And then I couldn't get a job for a year. So I was temping for a year. But, you know, eventually my break came when I got the opportunity at The Voice. Yeah, so lots of hard work, definitely.
I really appreciate you sharing that with me and with the listeners. Thank you so much, because I know it's like very personal. But I know there'll be people who listen to us now that it'll mean the world to them. That, yes. You know, whether they're students who, you know, work full-time, study full-time because they can't do it otherwise, or there are those who see the uni fees and just can't afford them at all. And I think that there are many ways to enter creative industries, and you don't have to go at all on the kind of the usual path.
Definitely.
So I do really hope that that happens more and more. And like, you're just such an amazing example of like with grit and hard work and kind of knowing what you want. If you kind of stay on the path, like you'll get where you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, this is pretty big, isn't it?
But you know, something else that I think has really sort of helped me throughout my career as well is the fact that I started freelancing very, very early in my career. I was literally a year in. So I actually got made redundant from The Voice. So Woman to Woman magazine closed down. And I just started to freelance. And I remember the editor, Deirdre Forbes, said, putting in my leaving card, she said something like, thank you so much. And I'm really excited about seeing your work in Cosmo. And sure enough, literally a few weeks later, I was freelancing as a designer at Cosmo. And then, like, from there, I just think my name got passed on and I had regular gigs at IPC on some of their leisure titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, do you know what? Like, I persevered. I never, ever opened Facebook at work. I always asked if anyone wanted me to photocopy something. Like, I would always offer to help. And also, I just made the best tea. Like, being a freelance designer, it is all about how you make tea. But I just think that this is also something that gave me quite thick skin, because I constantly challenged myself when I went to work at different places. Like, I 100% had imposter syndrome, and I was absolutely petrified before each new booking. I would go and get myself this work, or my name would be passed on, but I would never be able to sleep the night before, because I just think, I'm not going to be good enough. Like, you know, why am I doing this to myself? But I always did. I always constantly gave myself that challenge. And, you know, I really do feel as though that has helped me progress to where I want to. And it's made me sort of realise that actually I've worked at possibly 70 publications in my career, because I've freelanced for so many of them.
With a portfolio.
But also, I've been able to take all these, like, I feel a little bit like a thief. I feel like I've been stealing all of those little bits from every company that I've ever worked for. So this is something that's really lovely, because I can take all of this knowledge with me and put it into a startup, essentially. So that's been really lovely.
That's incredible. And you have so much understanding of various publications, paces, ways of working.
Yeah, completely. And also, like, an amazing book. Like, you know, I know so many amazing people in the industry. Like, I've just built up this, like, wonderful personal connections, which, again, is something that obviously helps when you're starting something new. Yeah.
And to finish off our conversation, I think it would be lovely to finish with advice for illustrators, animators, photographers who are starting out in this world currently. You've mentioned already kind of that freelancing is a good idea. What can they do to help themselves the most to... I'm not saying to find a job, the perfect job, whether they want to freelance or work for someone, but to make a living from their creativity.
Yeah, I mean, obviously right now it's such a tricky time. But I would definitely not see this time as wasted time. I think if you are self-employed, then 40% of your time should be spent on marketing. So do you know what? Sign up to LinkedIn Learning, get that free month's trial, learn some new skills. I definitely think if you're an illustrator, learn how to do basic animations. And you know what? When I'm talking basic, this could even be a really simple GIF in Photoshop. But it does make a difference if you have an understanding about how your artwork can move. So you might need to draw an extra frame, for example, that's slightly different. Showing that understanding will stand you in good stead, definitely. What else? So yeah, great time to update your portfolio. I think that it's really important to make sure that you've honed in on a really defining style. And I sort of feel as though if you try and be that illustrator who is a jack of all styles, like, but I can do everything, no one will remember you. Like, be the person that everyone remembers because you're obsessed with cats. You're that cat. And you know what? You'll stick in people's minds and they will remember you. But I would just make sure that you've got a carefully crafted body of work that encapsulates you as an artist. And if you can sort of inject your own personality into that, do that, because then it just makes your work really unique. What else? Definitely development. I mean, work on being visible, be reactive to the media. If you've already got some work, for example, that you've done, get it back up there. If the time is right, present yourself across all social media channels, definitely. And it just shows that you're busy, you're reactive. I would, you know, continue to send your works out to clients, absolutely. But I think definitely chase up these emails. Like, I feel as though teams have really taken a big hit during COVID. Like, publications are literally running on the minimal numbers. So it's a really tricky time for everyone. So they are really, really busy. So chase it up. They probably haven't had time to respond to you. You know, try different channels as well, like LinkedIn or Instagram. So definitely keep sending stuff out. And when you do, I do think it's always helpful to send like a beautifully crafted PDF that somebody like an art director or a picture editor can just download onto their desktop and look at the finer details, like saving it with your name, your discipline, do all of the hard work. I love it when people do this. I don't, you know, if I don't have to label somebody's PDF with their name that I've got to copy and paste off a website, this is saving me time and it's making my life easier. So just think about all those small little details. What else?
That's so much amazing information, so much amazing advice. I think I'll turn it into a few Instagram posts that people can just scroll through and kind of tick boxes once they've done it.
Definitely. And I think Instagram itself is, it's such a brilliant place to build a community. Like I find that the people that work in the field of illustration, everyone is so supportive. It's like you might have a similar style, but do you know what? Share ideas, offer tips, offer tutorials. I just think that it's such a lovely community. So this is where Instagram is like absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I found that as well. Actually, and I was so positively surprised when I started to kind of take my first steps. And yeah. I thought, oh, everybody's really lovely. This is nice. I can live in this world.
Definitely.
And it really has.
Sorry. Also, I do think it's been a really lonely world as well, being an illustrator. It's like you don't really get out that often. And, you know, suddenly it's come into the limelight that, oh, now we're all working from home. Like we, you know, it's really tricky because we don't really get out and see people. And it's like, welcome to the world of illustrators, because actually a lot of illustrators can't afford a co-working space. And it literally is, they're producing this fabulous artwork from the corner of their bedroom. So, you know, they're very used to this work environment. So that, I think that's another reason why there's possibly this amazing community out there online.
Because they all need each other to not go crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Brilliant. Well, Claire, thank you so much. And I think that everybody who's just listened to our chat will be very inspired, pepped up, and actually has a to-do list as well.
I hope so.
And I hope that Studio Pi goes really, really, really well. And that there's some exciting new work we'll be seeing coming out from the studio soon.
I honestly think there will be. Even some of the brands and companies that are reaching out to us, they think in the same way. They share the same core values. So I think there are going to be lots and lots of really exciting collaborations. I definitely, you know, I would love to see Studio Pi grow, and I really want us to take on more artists in the future, definitely.
Perfect. So if people want to see your website, what's the URL?
So it's Studio Pi, as in P-I, .co.uk.
Perfect. And are you Studio Pi on Instagram?
Yes, we are. Actually, I think it's StudioPi_UK.
Perfect. There we go. So if anybody's working on new projects and wants to reach out as well, they know how to do that too.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Claire. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, I really, really admire and love Claire for all her warmth, all just her openness is incredible. And I wish there was even more of that in the industry, and that everybody who's listening could, you know, if you're on top of your game, that you can see and how you can help others, and especially help those who might have more barriers to entry in the industry. And if you're just starting out, I really hope that you think that you can make it, that whatever you dream of, you can make it. And often it might be looking for mentors, people to support, or grants, but we've got this. And I think the industry is changing, and with everything that's happening this year, it's changing rapidly as well. So I hope we'll be seeing amazing work from Studio Pi, and we'll have more and more businesses championing diversity as well. And that's it for today's episode. And if you want to hear or listen to the previous kind of over 60 episodes now, you can just head over to undesignpodcast.com, or just look in kind of in the podcast library wherever you're listening to this, to search through previous episodes. I think some of my favorite ones were with Caroline Pei, who's the creative director at Headspace, and with Ash Lukander, who's a director at Aardman Animations and directed Coldplay's Daddy video, which is now award-winning as well. And there are so many, so many more. So enjoy, and do come back in 2 weeks' time, because I have more episodes for you. Bye!